Welcome to another edition of the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer with John Adams of the Knoxville News Sentinel. John, it feels like a little bit of life has come out of this Tennessee season after Saturday's lopsided loss to Georgia. Now, it's interesting because I think if you had asked most people, ourselves included, where Tennessee would be through three games, I think most people would say 2-1, and here they are at 2-1. But it just felt like a lot of excitement was building for Tennessee, got into the top 15 of the rankings. There was a thought, I think, that they could at least compete against Georgia, and that really didn't happen on Saturday.
No, not at all. And I think what added to that optimism was the first half. Georgia just gave Tennessee a gift of a touchdown on the bad snap. Kirby Smart made a boneheaded move that led to a Tennessee touchdown. So things were really going Tennessee's way. Georgia looked vulnerable. Tennessee hit those pass plays for touchdowns. So, yeah, the optimism built all the way, not just before the game, but all through the first half. And then what happened next was just totally demoralizing, I think, to Tennessee fans, because that was just an unraveling. And Georgia was so much better in the second half. I know Georgia has a great defense. There's no doubt about that. But Georgia scored 44 points on UT, and it didn't really look like a 44-point offense to me.
I agree. And, you know, I mentioned being not very competitive, and of course some people would probably point out that Tennessee actually led the game at halftime, 21-17. Of course, you mentioned some of the reasons for that. There was a gift of a touchdown. To Tennessee's credit, its defense made two really important fourth down stops. And Jarrett Garantano played really one of his better halves of football that he could have played in the first half, you know, a couple long passes. But Tennessee never really showed any ability to sustain drives. And you just felt like big part of that lead was as much to do with Georgia having a bad half as it was anything Tennessee was doing. And so, you know, to see that game swing in the second half, I guess it might have been surprising it just as how rapidly the offensive line fell apart. But then when you go back and look at it, the offensive line wasn't playing very good in the first half either. It's just Garantano was making good plays under pressure. And in the second half, he started making bad plays under pressure. You know, so I guess coming out of this now, do you just chalk it up as, well, Georgia's just that good? I mean, is Georgia just that good? Is this a team that could win the national championship this season? And so you say, well, I mean, this is just a Georgia team that, I mean, they're that good. Or is it Tennessee is just a mediocre football team?
I would go more with the latter after watching that second half. Georgia has some very obvious limitations on offense. Zamir White, five-star running back recruit, he's had two ACLs surgeries. He's a mediocre running back now. Georgia was counting on him to make the tough yards. He couldn't make a yard out down on the Tennessee goal line. I think they'll have a different running back. I think Kenny McIntosh will be their lead running back before the season's over, maybe by the Alabama game. And I think Kendall Milton's a promising freshman. But also Georgia's quarterback. I thought Tennessee did some good things defensively in spite of the score. But some of that could have been attributed to Georgia's offense. Stetson Bennett, as revered as he is in Dogland at this point, is not a championship quarterback by any stretch. You all practically cut the field in half with him. He can't throw deep. He can't throw the deep out. It's taken George Pickens, an elite receiver, out of the game. They run these timing routes and slants and quick throws. And Bennett is acceptable doing that. But George Pickens had two catches. He had two catches the week before. This is a guy that should be catching seven or eight balls a game for over 100 yards. So Georgia's offense is very limited. If it gets JT Daniels in there at quarterback, the Southern Cal transfer, puts the right running back in there and gets the ball to George Pickens, yeah, Georgia could end up in the college football playoff because the defense is really good. But I just didn't think against Tennessee that that was a championship caliber Georgia team. Bring back Jake Fromm, who beat Tennessee three straight years, put him at quarterback. Georgia scores a high in the high 50s in that game.
Yeah, it was interesting because there is a lot of positive narrative around Stetson Bennett right now, and I think that makes sense given his backstory, given Georgia's record. And, you know, the old cliche that quarterbacks get too much credit when you win and too much blame when you lose, I think applies in this case because I'm with you. I mean, I thought I used the word caretaker in one of my stories. To me, that's what Stetson Bennett looked like. He's a caretaker quarterback. He's not a championship quarterback. I agree. When he tried to throw downfield, it looked pretty ugly. I mean, Tennessee should have they had an easy interception, really, when he wobbled one into double coverage downfield that Trayvon Flowers dropped. And he made some nice plays with his feet. He was really good at taking advantage of Tennessee on those quick slants over the middle, just like South Carolina was. But I agree. I mean, it feels like he's just sort of holding down the fort right now, and they're leaning on this defense, certainly. But I'm not sure that's going to be enough for Georgia to win a championship. Now, defensively, I think it is a championship-level unit. I mean, you look at Eric Stokes, at Monty Rice, Azeez Ojulari. They just had their way repeatedly with the Vols. I got a question, John, from a member of my text group that I thought was a good question and a little bit difficult to answer.
Well, you got some deep thinkers in that group too.
I know, I do. Of course, I also have some that thought the only problem with Tennessee was they needed a new quarterback. of course, Garantano had a very poor second half and shouldn't be excused for some of his mistakes. Certainly the interception was a poor choice. He should have eaten the sack, and Tennessee should have punted. A couple of those turnovers, his offensive linemen almost should have been wearing red jerseys. They did such little to help him. You would have thought they were moles planted by Kirby Smart almost. but anyway, I digress. You know, I got a question about whether this was more an indication that Tennessee – still is at a big talent disadvantage. They're not recruiting high enough level talent as compared to Georgia, or is it more a development situation where Georgia is developing its players at a better rate and in a better way than what Tennessee is? You know, I guess I kind of hedged my bets in answering that question because I said I think in some areas Tennessee has the talent and you do have to question the development. I mean, if this offensive line does not play at a high level this season, to me, that's not an issue of talent. You know, I mean, with Trey Smith, Cade Mays, Wanya Morris, Darnell Wright on that offensive line, this should be one of the best offensive lines in the SEC, and the offensive line looked like, I mean, they were useless on Saturday. So to me, that is not an issue of talent. Now, when I look at comparing the defenses, after seeing Georgia's defense in the flesh, you're right that Tennessee's defense, I think, held its own at times. And if there was a silver lining to that game, maybe that was it. But when I thought about it, I think Henry Toa is the only guy who would start on Georgia's defense. I don't think Tennessee has anybody else that could start on Georgia's defense. And so to me, there still is, you know, some significant talent disparity that is on Jeremy Pruitt to close the gap.
Well, you can make the argument how many guys from any team in the SEC could start on Georgia's defense. I don't think more than three in most cases. Also, Tennessee's defense, I mean, it does have quite a few four stars back there, doesn't it? I mean, Toa Toa isn't the only top-notch recruit for that defense. Maybe in the defensive line, you don't have as many of those. But I was impressed with the way the defensive line played at times. But again, that may have said more about Georgia. I think it's a combination. I think Tennessee, you look at the rankings of its recruiting classes, they've gotten better every year. However, Georgia is like top three in recruiting every year. So when you say you want to have comparable talent to Georgia or Alabama, you need to be in the top five in recruiting, not just the top 10. So I think that's a factor. But also, I think Tennessee's got to do a better job developing guys. You've got linebackers, J.J. Peterson. A few years ago, he was one of – he might have been Tennessee's the crown jewel of its recruiting class a few years back. And he can't get on the field now. It might not be coaching. It might be him. But I'm just saying there – so I think you got to get the elite players and then you got to develop them if you're going to play with Georgia, Alabama, and Florida.
I'm not really sure how many four stars there are on that defense. You got Toa Toa, you have Alante Taylor and Bryce Thompson and Jalen McCullough. So you might only have four stars on the whole defense. And you look at the linebacker, I mean, Kaveris Crouch was a four star. I'm not sure that ranking was based on his ability as a linebacker, though.
As a running back, I guess.
Yeah. And if anybody on that defensive line that's playing a lot of snaps was a four-star, that they probably shouldn't have been.
Was Aubrey Solomon, when he was signed by Michigan, I bet he was a four-star.
He might have been a five-star. Yeah, he played 12 snaps. And so, you know, the guys that are really taking most of the snaps for Tennessee's defense, it's pretty lacking in four- and five-star recruits. You know, maybe that's on failing to develop some of the four-star recruits that they have signed. You know, it's interesting to me that here in the third year of the Jeremy Pruitt era, the two best pass rushers on this team are Butch Jones leftovers and DeAndre Johnson and Kevon Bennett. That's two best pass rushers on this team. And it didn't do Tennessee any favors there when DeAndre Johnson kind of had a silly penalty and got ejected in the first quarter, because the difference in pass rush was one of the disparities on this game. And you know who plays the most for their defensive line is Matthew Butler, another Butch Jones holdover. So here we are in year three, and now certainly, you know, Toa Toa is a Jeremy Pruitt recruit. And the two cornerbacks, Alante Taylor and Bryce Thompson, two of the better players that are playing at a better level on this defense, are a couple of Jeremy Pruitt recruits. But I do feel like in year three of the Pruitt era, there needs to be some more high-impact defensive players that he was responsible for bringing into the program.
That's a good point. I mean, you could say – you really could say that about not just the defense, but the whole team. And that really makes a difference. You can recruit well, as Tennessee has done, but you get those really special players that can play at such a high level. They can rise to the occasion. Azeez Ojulari for Georgia, that was so obvious against Tennessee. I mean, he just disrupted the passing game completely in the second half. I think Tennessee has pretty good cornerbacks, but Georgia has better cornerbacks. You can say that, like, Tennessee might have a pretty good player at a position, but Georgia has a better player at that position. I think Georgia would probably rather have Henry Toa Toa as an inside linebacker as opposed to Monty Rice, who's played a lot of ball for them, but is not what I consider to be a really great middle linebacker. So, yeah, I mean, you've got to have those few guys that make a difference. And you see it with George's offense. I mean, Georgia, looking the other way, it doesn't have – George Pickens is an outstanding receiver, and it can't get him involved in the offense because of the quarterback, really. And so Georgia's got a two-star quarterback, a mediocre best quarterback, and it's Zamir White is at best a mediocre running back. And you put Jake Fromm in at quarterback, and going back a little further, Sonny Michel or Nick Chubb at running back, or not as far back with DeAndre Swift. Think how different that offense would be. So to your point, those really outstanding players, you get one or two of those on offense or defense, and it does make a big difference.
The quarterback position is going to be talked about in any three-touchdown loss, I think. And of course, Jarrett Garantano, the fact just is he's worn out. His welcome for a lot of Tennessee fans, and that's just the way it goes for a longtime quarterback who's endured a lot of losses throughout his career. But, you know, when I think about Garantano's performance on Saturday, I think I go back to what we talked about going into the season, what we talked about after the South Carolina game. You know, this was an offense that needed to be built around the running game and its offensive line. And to expect Garantano to all of a sudden become an upper echelon quarterback was really a mistake on the part of anyone who was expecting that. You know, I think we all knew that this offense, its strengths needed to be Ty Chandler, Eric Gray, and that offensive line full of five stars. And on Saturday, the offensive line gave him nothing. The running backs didn't have much chance to give him much. And Garantano actually was a big reason why they were leading at halftime. And in the second half, got no pass protection. And I think he's a guy that eventually, if you put him under enough pressure and if you don't give him any help, he's going to crumble. And we saw that there in the second half. But we heard Jeremy Pruitt say on Monday, John, that Garantano's the quarterback. You know, he's Garrett's the guy that gives him the best chance.
He gives us the best opportunity to have success. You know, when you got first and 20, it's tough to make first downs. When you got second and 15, it's tough to make first
downs. Do you think Tennessee would be wise to start considering other options, or do you feel like this is the guy that they need to roll with this week? Or not just this week, but this season?
No, I think Pruitt's exactly right on that. Garantano is their best chance at quarterback. Starting quarterback of Tennessee's first three opponents, I would take Garantano over any of them. I would take Garantano over Terry Wilson of Kentucky this week. The offensive line and the running backs, their success is pretty much tied to the offensive line. If you give Eric Gray and Ty Chandler a chance to get into the secondary, they'll make a lot more plays than Zamir White will for Georgia. But you got to get them into the secondary. I think what was most disheartening about the offensive line, you watch it against Missouri, and it was just dominant. But then it gets up against a defensive front and in Georgia that was so that has been just as dominant. It's like, okay, now you're playing against competitive guys, and Tennessee couldn't handle it. It was almost like the big bully scenario. If they can overwhelm somebody physically, they will do it time and time again. But then you put them in there with guys of comparable ability, it was like they couldn't handle it. And that was, to me, the biggest factor in the game. There's no question. They gave Garantano, he had more time in the first half, and he threw two beautiful touchdown passes. Tennessee's got, you know, it gets back to your earlier point with, Tennessee, you could say Tennessee is. It does. The game speaks more to Tennessee's mediocrity than to Georgia's championship capabilities in that particular game. The strength of your team became a weakness, and that just can't happen.
Well, I want to follow up on that question, John. I asked, is Georgia just that good, or is Tennessee just that mediocre? And you said, maybe tend to lean a little bit toward the latter. What exactly do you think that means for Tennessee this season, though? You know, I think we would both agree that even if we're dubbing Tennessee as a mediocre team here, they're still good enough to beat a lot of opponents on their schedule. But, you know, does that mean that Tennessee could maybe expect to finish 5-5 this year? Does that just mean they're probably not going to beat Alabama or Florida? And it may not be all that competitive against either of those teams, but that they should have a decent shot against anybody else.
Oh, I agree with the latter. I think Tennessee still could win 7 games. That's what was my prediction for the season. That would indicate progress in Jeremy Pruitt's third season. I think what's important for Tennessee, it's not just to beat the teams it's supposed to beat, and I think it can do that. The Missouri game was a good example. Tennessee won that by 23 points. Missouri beat LSU Saturday. LSU might be the worst team in the West, but I just think Tennessee can handle the other teams on its schedule outside of Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. A&M will be a tough game, but A&M beat Florida, but on the other hand, it beat at Vanderbilt by 5 points. So I'm not all in on Texas A&M right now. Two of the teams on Tennessee's schedule that were preseason top 15 teams are Auburn and Texas A&M. Auburn is not a top 15 team. A&M looked the part against Florida, but it didn't look the part in its other games. So to me, those are games that look like they could go either way in preseason. I would certainly favor Tennessee against Auburn, even playing at Auburn. So, yeah, I think Tennessee is still the expectations of the season. If I think most people picked Tennessee 6-4, 7-3. That's very realistic. But I think for Tennessee fans to feel good about the season, they have to do – the Vols have to do more than 6-4, 7-3. They have to play a full game against Florida or Alabama, unlike what happened against Georgia. They have to show that, yeah, you're getting more competitive against these teams. Right now, Jeremy Pruitt's 0-7 rather against those teams. And all the games were double-digit margins. I guess all of them were by
three touchdowns, at least three touchdowns.
You got to close that gap for Tennessee fans to feel really good about the program.
John, I guess we should at least briefly turn the page and look forward to Saturday's game. Feels like a lot of the narrative right now, and we're contributing to that, is continuing to dissect this Georgia loss. But the Vols will have a game on Saturday. They'll try to bounce back against Kentucky. And I said before the season that, you know, this could be that sneaky game on the schedule where if Tennessee loses one that people weren't expecting them to lose, this would be it. Because I didn't feel like there was that much separating Tennessee and Kentucky's programs. How realistic is it to think that this could be a close game and could be trouble for Tennessee on Saturday?
Kentucky has beaten Tennessee something like 6 times in 55 years. Tennessee has more trouble with Vanderbilt than it does Kentucky. It's just one of those programs that Tennessee just has its number. And I always think of Kentucky will sink to the occasion. I think Mark Stoops has improved Kentucky football in the years he's been there. It's gotten better. He's recruited better. It's a tougher team. But look what happens to it against Tennessee in 2018. That was a top 15 team coming in here and Tennessee manhandling. I just don't see Tennessee losing to Kentucky. Regardless of the circumstances, it's just one of those games that it prevails and it usually brings out the worst. Kentucky sees orange and just starts spiraling downward. It can't help itself.
Two of the last 3 years, this game has been decided by 4 points or fewer. Kentucky won one of those in 2017. Tennessee used a goal line stop to win last season. And we often talk about on this podcast the tiers of the SEC and how Tennessee has broken away at least somewhat from that bottom tier, and they're not up to the Georgia-Florida tier yet. They're somewhere in this, like, in-between tier. Aside from the fact that Kentucky has really failed against Tennessee other than a couple years ago, do you think Kentucky has also put itself on that ledge, whatever that middle tier is that we're putting Tennessee on in the East now? Do you think Kentucky has separated itself from the SEC East cellar dwellers and put itself in that middle tier? Or are they, your mind, still in that group with South Carolina, Missouri, and Vanderbilt?
We've got, if we're going to do the tier thing, it's as though we've got 7 teams in the division, and we're breaking it down to about 4 tiers. So let's think about it. You got Georgia and Florida, that's one tier. Let's flip to the very bottom. Vanderbilt is a tier unto itself. There's no doubt about that. So then you have South Carolina and Missouri, one step from Vanderbilt's level. It's a big step nonetheless. So that's the tier. That's what, three tiers I've got. Right. And you got Kentucky, which has an edge on Missouri and South Carolina. Maybe the coach at South Carolina at Missouri can change that, Eli Drinkowitz. But so then we've got Tennessee on its own tier. So we've got seven teams and five tiers. I think that's a fair way to break it down. I just think there's separation from each level.
Well, and if you really wanted to go further, there's still been separation between Georgia and Florida.
That's fair.
I don't know that you could really draw a line between South Carolina and Missouri. So I don't know if you could get to a full seven tiers. We might just have to draw the line at six tiers in the SEC East.
Yeah, I just see them on this little bitty tier fighting it out to try and move up to Kentucky's perch on the bracket.
Well, the hell with that storyline, then. You've pretty well poked holes in that. The idea that Kentucky's on Tennessee's tier, because everybody's just got their own tier. We got six different tiers.
Lose 49 of 55 games and be on the same tier with somebody.
Fair enough, John. I'm gonna eliminate that possible narrative from my arsenal. All right, we'll close with predictions, John. You've eliminated any chance for Kentucky here. I think I'll start off, and then maybe you can surprise us at the end. But I'll take a Tennessee victory. I'll say, let's go with 28-17 Vols.
That's kind of about what I would think. Say maybe 27-13. Again, it's that to me has so much to do with Kentucky versus Tennessee. I just haven't seen it play well at Neyland Stadium very often.
All right, John. We'll be back next week to recap the action. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.